Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello there, welcome to episode 33 of the AI Comic Pod. I am Stu, and with me as always is Rory. How are you doing this fine evening?
I am good. Happy to be back and doing this a little bit more regularly. It's been a couple of weeks, but we're back again.
Yeah, we don't be offended, people, but we do just keep forgetting. We seem to just keep remembering on like a Sunday night, hang on, shit, we're supposed to be recording. So anyone who's been on will know we are consummate professionals with buckets of preparation, tons of research, and if it at all sounds like we're making it up as we go along, that's because that's the way we want to be perceived. We want to be seen as being really casual.
Yeah, it's essentially that's it. We're going for the casual look.
Because making an effort's not cool, is it? And we just want everyone to think that we're really cool.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
That's why we did this in the first place. It was money.
Chicks. No, I mean drugs. Actual chicks, like chickens.
Oh, okay.
Chicken nuggets and stuff.
Fried chicken, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. We didn't want to talk about fried chicken, but you know how these things go. What we're going to do tonight is we're going to do something a little bit different. We want to look at DC Comics as a whole, the whole enterprise, the comics, the TV, and the movies. And we've titled this one The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. It's pretty well known. I'm the resident DC fanboy. I grew up reading DC, watching DC. They've had a bit of a checkered past. They've had some spectacular failures. They've had some monumental successes. And then there's been a lot of stuff that's occupied that really tepid grey area in the middle. So what we want to do is go through some of the different properties they've got and split them off into those three areas. We'll talk the good, we'll talk the bad, and then we'll vomit violently at the ugly. And I can guarantee now that most of you already know what the lead thing is going to be when we start talking about ugly. But let's start off on a happy note for once, rather than being miserable bastards. I wanted to start off the good with the bread and butter of DC Comics, which is, shock horror, the comics. I think it started last July, was DC Rebirth. And a lot of people thought that this was a reboot, but it wasn't a reboot. They went to great lengths with the likes of Geoff Johns to tell people it's not a reboot. It's a correction. The New 52 was a complete reboot. They rewrote the stories of a lot of people. They retconned a lot of the history. And they fucked up a lot of the characters. They really, really ruined a lot of really, really beloved characters. So the Rebirth was actually an effort to correct those mistakes and bring back a lot of the things that they'd taken out. Now, I know you've not read any of these. I subscribe to an absolute fuckload of them, and so does Joey. And he and I talk about them a couple of times a week because we read a lot of them, a lot of the same titles, so we've always got things to bounce off each other. But since
I mean, it's well known. It's well known that DC as a comic base was always full of the better characters. Do you know what I mean? They always had the upper hand in that regard.
Well, they've got the big one, haven't they? Whether I like him or not, and I have got back into him, they've got Superman, and Superman is
Batman's the
superhero.
One.
Yeah, but Superman is like the number one.
But not for popularity, surely. Batman is and has always been the one that everyone goes to in terms of comics, film, merchandise. No?
Maybe for film, but I think you'd be surprised how popular and certainly how accessible Superman is, with him being quite colourful and not as dark as Batman is,
he's dull though, isn't he? I mean, that's the thing with Superman.
He is a bit, and that's why I went off him, because I've said time and time again, he's the easiest character to write for, because he can do everything, and he's got one minor weakness, which isn't that big a deal. But I've actually now subscribed to a couple of Superman titles, because what they've done in Rebirth is brilliant, where they've made a lot of mistakes with Superman in the New 52, but since the Rebirth started, they are absolutely killing Marvel on comic sales. They are outselling them almost every week or every fortnight or every month, however a certain title is out. And Marvel are actually having a lot of problems. You know, they're killing the films. They're making billions and billions on the the cinema.
Yeah.
And
that's what Disney care about, obviously.
Basically, Disney don't care about, 20, 30 page comics going out once or twice a month. They care about, can we get two or three films out every year that are going to make us, $2.5 billion collectively? And then the merchandise and the rides.
That's what makes money, man. I mean, as much as, and comics is, comics is the form that it's obviously the original form. It's the print obviously media these days in terms of electronic comics and stuff, but it's what the purists enjoy, but that's not to say it's, modern age isn't always about not reading or absorbing in that fashion.
It's about money.
Film is huge as well though, isn't it? I mean, film and TV is what most people, subscribe their lives towards anyway. Do you know what I mean? So it's tricky to say, Marvel, as much as they've been failing on the comic front, overly are concerned about that. I don't think, doesn't it? It's almost a swings and roundabouts thing, isn't it?
It's very much like, it's like football. These things work in cycles, because while DC was struggling with the New 52, Marvel was killing it.
Yeah.
So now, while DC are making serious money, Marvel are struggling. But supposedly, there was a rumor came out today that Marvel are planning on doing a Rebirth-like event to retcon a lot of their problems, because it hasn't gone down well that Steve Rogers isn't Captain America, Tony Stark isn't Iron Man, Thor isn't Thor. They've started to become a lot more diverse, and the classic Avengers don't, not so much that they don't exist, but it isn't who you expect it to be. Whereas DC have now gone back to the classic Justice League, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman,
you stick
Aquaman.
With your big hitters, don't you?
You have to. And yes, some of these characters have been around for 60, 70, 80 years. Well, that's their job. They've got to find a way to make a guy that was first written in 1940 new and exciting and relevant. So as a comic reader and as somebody who got the bug back again last year, I've been loving getting in. I get a parcel off Forbidden Planet like pretty much every week with me latest bits in, because they all get drip fed throughout the month, and it's great. I've got the fever, I've got the excitement back. Another area that DC have really killed it, and we've spoken about it before, has been the animated movies, which again is another area that Marvel hasn't really done.
They don't really get involved in that at all in the slightest, I'd say. Not often.
They're all childish or childlike. They're all aimed at, probably the under 10s. There's no blood. There's no real violence. It's your classic Avengers, but without any real grit and determination. Whereas DC have
been doing... The TV shows are terrible, I'll be honest. The TV shows, anything produced on telly in Marvel form, of that nature, animated, is just awful.
Yeah,
awful.
I tried watching one of them, Avengers Assemble, and I managed six or seven episodes, and I had to give up because it was so saccharine and cheesy. And
it's not done by the same. It doesn't have any links to anyone who's good in terms of Marvel fiction.
It's completely removed, whereas DC's animated arm is very much under the DC extended universe. It still involves a lot of the same writers and a lot of the same people. And they're covering things like the most recent one, Justice League Dark, is all about the occult. So it's got Swamp Thing, Constantine, who was in his own show, cool. and Arrow, Zatanna, who's a longtime Justice League member, the daughter of another magician, Deadman, who's a brilliant character who's dead and he can inhabit other people's bodies. So it's a cult. It's weird. It's really dark. They had the Killing Joke.
Like I need to check it out.
They had Under the Red Hood. So you're dealing with a lot more dark themes. And they're doing well. The fact that they were able to release the Killing Joke, which would normally be straight to disc, and they were able to put it out in cinemas and actually made a good amount of money.
And then straight to download, didn't it? It was quite clever, actually. So they did a mini release at the cinema, and then obviously...
It did well. A lot of those showings, certainly in the UK, sold out. And I think they've proven now, in the same way that Deadpool proved, you can make money off an R-rated film. That's shown that if given the right story, you can release an animated comic movie and make money off it rather than just relying off digital sales or, you know,
the story is the key in all of it, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, you couldn't, I think, without being the Joker in that guise and that form. And was it Mark Hamill again who voiced it?
Yeah, it was the return of the classic Joe. It was both of them had said, Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy had both said, because they'd stopped doing the voices. I think I said to you, Jason Mara, who's now the new director on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he voices Batman in a lot of the new movies. But Kevin Conroy said, if there's anything that'll get me out of retirement, in inverted commas, it's the Killing Joke. And Mark Hamill said, yeah, if I'm ever going to do the Joker one more time, it's got to be for the Killing Joke. There's pretty much nothing else that they would have signed on for, because it is regarded as being the best Batman story ever.
Yeah.
And so the animated side of things has been brilliant. And I urge anyone who's interested in them to go back and watch them start right back in 93 with Mask of the Phantasm, which was an extended version from Batman, the animated series. It carried on from that. And they've had probably 25 to 30 animated films. A lot of them center around the same people. A lot of them are either Batman, Superman, or the Justice League. But as you said, you stick with your heavy hitters. You know, you stick with the ones that are on T-shirts and pencil cases. And, you know, everyone knows all those people. Everyone knows who Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, Aquaman are. If they were to start dropping the really weird ones in, they're not going to sell well.
No, not immediately. No, exactly. I think you'll see those in some form, you know, as the films kind of develop and you know. But they'll tend to focus on their main... I think the films are where it's, you know, you talked about animated, you talked about, you know, there's some good films that we need to discuss, obviously, and then it's the films that often let it down a little bit, you know? It doesn't get storylines out as well, possibly as you say, because a lot of it, they don't do the riskier elements of it. And when they try and do riskier, a la Suicide Squad, they don't often get it right.
They don't have the conviction. I mean, it came out, didn't it, that David Ayer did a very, very good version of the film, but the studio didn't have the balls to release it as was.
Yeah, I still don't know if it had been that good. It was better, wasn't it?
Same as Batman versus Superman. Both of them have had a director's cut, which has been much better received, which has addressed a lot of the issues with editing and continuity and plot holes and what have you. And I know it wouldn't have been the difference between, you know, it being a 5 or 6 out of 10 and it being Civil War version 2. But it maybe wouldn't have been people. A friend of mine who's a big cinema goer, she actually said to me there was parts where she sat there and she's scratching her head going, I don't know how you've just gone from that scene to that scene. There was nothing in the middle.
We'll move on to that. Let's talk how films should be directed and talk Christopher Nolan. Yep. And we probably can talk early Batman as well. Because
if we do early Batman, which is the logical place, it's yeah. most people's introduction, isn't it, really, to certainly to Batman on the big screen, if not to Batman in general. I think that was my first exposure to Batman, and I was only, I probably didn't watch it when I was eight.
So all the TV thing knocking about, but yeah, I probably watched it when I was 10 or 12.
I'm thinking 10 maybe. But that, I mean, that was dark. That was a good portrayal. That was a portrayal that's held up now. He is still Michael Keaton, a lot of people's favourite Batman. And that is still a lot of people's favourite.
Circle as well into that kind of genre, which is great, you know? So it's nice that he's still, you know, connected. And yeah, I mean, Tim Burton's, you know, some of Tim Burton's early films are wonderful, to be honest. I think Edward Scissorhands was around that kind of period, and it's kind of when he was at his most exciting and daring and edgy.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah, it was that early, you know, because he was kind of like no one else, Tim Burton. I mean, he's only directed about 30-odd films in his career, and he's been going a long, long time.
And every single one of them's got Helena Bonham Carter in.
Pretty much, until they got divorced in recent times. But so, yeah, he did Batman in 80, he did Beetlejuice in 88, and then Batman 89, Scissorhands is 90.
That's a hell of a fucking 3-year period, that.
Oh, no, exactly. Jesus. Exactly. He was on a roll, and then Batman Returns, which I still love Batman Returns.
Let me refresh.
DeVito was the Penguin, and Michelle Pfeiffer, I thought, was a really good Catwoman.
Unfairly lambasted that film.
Yeah, it's better than people give it credit for. Yeah, I think it's a lot better than people give it credit for. I mean, truth be told, I don't think I've watched it as an adult, maybe, so I need to go back and rewatch it, and probably I might pick holes in it then. But, you know, as a film, I think what Burton did and what Nolan continued to do is they made a perfect Gotham. You know, they made a really dark Gotham that you really need in cinema. And it's more focused on the city and what goes on in the city than the characters sometimes. You know, it's the city that makes, you know, Gotham to me is the iconic venue. You know, like if we talk at Avengers, that's spread out across New York, and then they, you know, Winter Soldier and stuff, they throw that in different European cities. You don't ever get a real base of where it's set and what's going on. You flip between different areas, and that's fine. But there's something about Gotham that is, if it's done right, is just crucial in films. So, yeah, I think Burton nailed it. Yeah.
And that's where Schumacher fucked up, isn't it? Because the first thing he did, he started making it all neon and steampunk inspired. And as soon as you start losing the gothic aspect, it feels more like New York rather than Gotham. Like, I agree exactly what you just said. Gotham is like one of the seminal locations in film for me. It's like, it's dark, it's brooding, it's massively troubled, and there's nowhere else like it.
Itself, you know, it's almost got its own living, breathing kind of undercurrent. You know, you always get a feel when it's done well that the whole city's kind of alive at night. Do you know what I mean? It's when everything kind of comes out. It obviously takes connotations from New York and the architecture and the style, but it's the way it's done that's just so effective. And I mean, you know, Burton's were great, but I think that the classic trilogy, I think the best trilogy ever made, which is quite a statement.
Better than Star Wars?
I'd possibly argue yes.
I couldn't decide. That would be like me saying to you, which is the favorite of you two kids? Just couldn't even begin, but it's
I won't
there.
Put it out there. I won't put it out.
In case the wife listens.
No, in case anyone ever listens. It's at least one of the top three trilogies ever made. I mean,
it's up there with Star Wars, and admittedly, I've never seen any of the Godfather films, but, you know,
Axe is going to cull us off the air, man. I've only recently.
No, we won't. I've got more than enough blackmail to keep us going for decades.
That's fine.
As nobody knows that he wears high heels, we'll be fine.
Well, what else is going to make him above 5 foot?
Right, then
we're definitely gone now. So
yeah. See you later.
Need to get in. Let's just get him in now. Yeah. I mean, the Nolan trilogy is a work of art. That's the best way to describe it. People, you know, I've read a few people's kind of feelings on that, that The Dark Knight's not as good a film as people say it is, but bullshit. It bloody is. Yeah, exactly.
Absolute
bullshit. I think what they're trying to imply is that it's very much orientated around the Joker, and if he wasn't in it, it wouldn't be as good a film. But surely that's the point, isn't it? I mean, well, yeah, he is in it, that's like, and he's a crucial element of it. You know,
if you take Vader out of Star Wars, there's a big, you know, villain shaped hole there. That's like going to a steakhouse and complaining that all they serve is steak. What's the problem with having a Batman film that centres around one of the greatest depictions of one of the greatest villains ever in cinema?
I mean, going back when we first started this, obviously we did the movie night, the excellent Joe Simpson. We discussed, you know, Nolan in length, and we discussed, you know, what he'd brought to the film and the character. And Heath Ledger's performance is like nothing else you've probably seen in cinema for me. I mean, the villains, I think... In the first one, I think it was a great film, and I thought it was a really good kind of reintroduction to Batman.
Begins?
Yeah, in Batman Begins.
Because bear
really
in mind, a lot of people forget there hadn't been a Batman film since 1997.
Well, exactly.
There hadn't been a good Batman film since 1992. So for argument's sake, you were talking 13 years since the last good Batman. They didn't just do the origin. They skip over the origin of, yeah, we know his parents died, but they did the bit that nobody else had really done. Though that 15-year gap or whatever it is in between the parents dying and how he comes back to Gotham, how is he so strong? How is he so motivated? And how is he such a good fighter when he was a rich bastard that was brought up, you know, with everything? He didn't need anything.
Because you've never had that before.
No.
You know, they've never got that across before. You've never, I mean, Bale... You know, people aren't always convinced by him. I think Bale's magnificent.
I think he was fantastic. Yeah. The only thing he did wrong across those three films was the voice. The voice.
I know,
was
but they
ludicrous.
Always get the voice wrong. I mean, it's Batman's voice is done badly nearly every time. It's
apart from Ben Affleck's the only one that's taken the sensible approach and gone, well, why doesn't he just have like a digital thing built in the cow?
Yeah, well, granted, but...
If that's the only thing you can complain about across three films, which must be, what, 5 hours of cinema time or something?
Yeah,
if the only thing you can say is that his voice sounds stupid, he's done a pretty good job.
Oh, it's, you know, he has. He was great in it, and the whole cast in it was incredible, to be honest.
Gary fucking Oldman's just amazing in all of them.
Yeah, he is.
He really
and
is.
Morgan Freeman has got a minor role and he's excellent in all of them.
Yeah.
I think Alfred, played by Michael Caine, is just the perfect depiction, to be honest.
He's a good little ball buster, isn't he, Michael Caine?
He is a good ball buster.
He's like your best mate and your butler, but you know, he'll kick you right up the arse if you need him to.
Yeah, I think everyone in each of those films is probably perfectly cast. And that's the thing with Nolan, and that's what he brings to the table, because, you know, he brings actors with him. I mean, Cillian Murphy was a brilliant Scarecrow, if you ask me. I think he's absolutely spot
on. His eyes. He's got crazy, crazy eyes.
He has. He was in some film called... Red Eye or something one time, which is like a, you know, terrible kind of indie horror crossover film, but you know, again, he just looks menacing as hell in those films, and that's what he's good at. And Nolan knows actors that he likes working with, and he brings them to the table and tends to stick with him. I mean, Michael Caine's in every single Nolan film, and to get a director of Nolan's caliber who does the whole process, so he's your Tarantino type or your David Fincher or whoever, who will write it properly, direct it, produce it, you know, do the whole thing and put that much love and care and attention into it. And it's the attention to detail that really makes it.
And there's not many, is there? He's not just he's a filmmaker. He's not just a director or a producer.
Out. Yeah. He's stand out. I mean, he is elite level director. You know, there's people that go, well, Scorsese this, and a lot of people are living on Scorsese's past, even though he has modernized and produced some good films in recent years, but Nolan is up there. I mean, you know, Inception, this trilogy, Prestige is an incredible film, and then
Interstellar,
and then he's done Dunkirk, which is out in a few months and is supposed to be incredible. And yeah, I mean, he's probably one of the best directors, if not most people's, you know, favorite director currently directing film. So yeah, to get him on board the way he did with that cast, and to get Bale all the way through, and the villains, and even Marianne Cotillard, and you know, and
Tom Hardy.
And it's just everyone in it, I think, is perfectly cast. I think the third film is a slight... Do you know what? I think the third film, out of context, would be great. I think what people let it down on is just because how good The Dark Knight was.
Yeah. But and you, there's a you look at of that, though.
Moments in it, you know, but
it
was, other than
it, it
that,
only made a disappointing billion at the box office.
Well, exactly. And I still watched it in IMAX and loved it.
Yeah. Oh, just the IMAX experience.
I think it was a little bit too long. Yeah, and Nolan did IMAX like no one else, you know, without
the
3D element.
He was one of the few people that really embraced it, didn't he? He didn't just shoot scenes in IMAX. He shot the whole thing. He designed and composed every frame to make sure that when you see Gotham, you see the whole of Gotham side to side with no... You know, no cutting or anything.
Just, I loved it. I mean, one of the scenes I remember in IMAX most vividly is probably the Hong Kong scene.
Yeah, when he goes to, that's one I was going to say.
Just in IMAX, I've just never seen anything like that until I saw Inception. And I think that was probably before Inception, but again, it's a Nolan film, and it was just incredible in IMAX. And he just does IMAX with that kind of deep, heavy soundtrack. I mean, the soundtrack's just incredible in these films, you know, and they kind of got that kind of Star Wars-esque where the soundtrack, you know, is running through the entire trilogy, and you get the impression when the pace is up on the soundtrack and you know what's coming with the music. And yeah, I just thought, I think it's hard to argue against it being at least tied
one off.
Yeah, one off, exactly, the best trilogies. And I think what's most disappointing is that, you know, they had a really impressive Catwoman, and everyone was doubting Anne Hathaway, but I thought she was
in
that part.
I really thought that she was going to be a really crap selection.
It's because she hadn't really done a lot of it before. People just think Devil Wears Prada and X, Y, and Z, you know, that she's done. But she's got a bit of edge to her. I think she's shown that.
She came from that sort of background, didn't she? It was all softly child stuff. And then she really stepped up, and I'm really disappointed that they didn't capitalize. If I could have done anything, it would have been to have got some kind of blackmail, some kind of leverage on Nolan, and make him do another trilogy.
Well, I mean, yeah, everyone would have loved that, but there was nothing wrong with DC going, look, we've got an effective Catwoman here who can be directed by somebody else, and made a film, and then they could have linked it into, you know, they could have done what Marvel did and built a more organic, you know, development of film into other areas and other genres, and, you know, brought in other characters. And I think that's the disappointing thing, is that they had that opportunity and then they kind of let it go.
And she would have done it. I'm pretty sure I think she said since that I think she would still be open to doing it now, but now it would be more difficult to do because I think now she's got a family. I think that shit may have sailed.
Well, they've screwed it a bit because it wouldn't really fit in well in the context of what they're trying to reinvent now on, obviously, on doing all the bigger scale stuff. But
it would have been handy with them, with there being suggestions that they're doing a Gotham City Sirens film in the future.
Yeah.
Because Catwoman would have been a big part of that. And it's a shame to not capitalize on a good performance, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, just and Blake keep as well. Momentum. I mean, you know, I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt a lot. I think he's a really accomplished actor, and I liked his role in that film. And I thought he could have gone on to do some kind of Robin role, not necessarily take the bat suit. I think that would have not worked for him as an actor, but I still think he would have been an excellent Robin because he's again got that kind of charisma, and
he's got the look.
Yeah, he does.
You see knock-up images of, say, Brie Larson online as Captain Marvel, it suits. And when you see a mock-up picture of him as either Robin or even more so Nightwing, he just looks like...
He had the perfect look for it.
He had the look of Dick Grayson. He really had the Grayson look down, but a little bit edgier, a bit less polished.
Yeah, it's just disappointing because, again, he's an actor of pretty esteemed quality, and you got a couple of actors there who are quite young and quite fresh and could have done a lot of good things with them, and they just basically screwed it by just waiting for Nolan and never realising that he wasn't ever going to come back for all the money in Fort Knox, really. So, yeah, it's I think that's one of the things that, you know, that covers a big chunk of the good. There might be other things in and amongst it.
Well, there's a couple of noticeable ones that we've actually already talked about. One of them being V for Vendetta, and also Watchmen. One of the most faithfully recreated comic book adaptations of all time. I mean, it is literally
a bit too much, I think, is what frame for frame is, isn't it?
It's like 300. It is literally as if someone's just taken the book, thrown it at a screen, and somehow it's stuck.
Well, and we know which director has had his hand in 300.
Yes,
and
but you're not
Watchmen.
Going to go on a rant about him yet. That's in the next section.
Well, I'm not necessarily going to rant on him anyway. It's one of those, I think we've done that. I think
there's always time to rip on that Zack Snyder, though.
Yeah, I think with Zack, I think it's just a case of he has chance to redeem himself still. I just worry that he's... You know, I know you're looking forward to Justice League, but I think that's a bit make or break for this whole franchise. But I think we should talk. I think Batman versus Superman crosses a bit of the good and a bit of the bad.
It's the ideal segue, isn't it, really? For the next bit, we've done the good. So obviously things that are unequivocally brilliant, positive, successful, whatever. The bad, so it's that tepid bit again in the middle of the things that they're not awful, but they're not brilliant. They're flawed, but they've got some positives.
Yeah.
And Batman versus Superman very much falls into that. It gave us our best, in my opinion, our best Bruce Wayne, because Bruce Wayne is basically Ben Affleck anyway, and Ben Affleck is basically Bruce Wayne. It gave us one of our best Batman performances. There's a big toss-up between Christian Bale, Ben Affleck, and Michael Keaton, but each one of them is a different type. You know, Michael Keaton was very much the standoffish type because the suit didn't allow him to fight the same way that Christian Bale was able to.
Yeah.
But Batman is now, by Ben Affleck, he's now 10, 15 years older or something. He's a bit more grisly. He's a bit slower, but he's also a lot stronger and a lot
hardened.
Yeah. Good word. And we said in the preview.
I think his suit and his style of fighting was slower, but it was experience, you know, and I think it was...
He's relying more on his brain now than his speed. He knows he's got to be more considered with every punch that he throws and every step that he takes. But that's natural, isn't it? You know, that's what happens with footballers and I assume with, like, boxers or whatever. As your speed goes, you have to compensate in other areas. And he did it well. And
it
had other good areas as well. Jeremy Irons was good. Wonder Woman's introduction was good. It opened up the door to Justice League by giving us the underlying story and also the quick glimpses into the new characters. Sorry, I'm being lapped on by my producer here, the small furry white one. What are you doing? I think he wants to talk about Batman versus Superman. I think he got all excited because he knew that we were just about to talk about how appallingly bad Jesse Eisenberg was.
Oh, do you know what? I feel a bit for Jesse Eisenberg because I think he's been dealt probably the shittest hand in cinema in recent years because he shouldn't... I mean, he probably shouldn't have gone for it, but I'm sure his agent said, oh, this would be a good move for you.
It's the comic effect, isn't it? Yeah, do a comic film.
He shouldn't have been anywhere near that film, though. He should only because, look, I like Eisenberg, and a lot of people don't. He's quite divisive. He's quite Marmite.
But if you
watch The Social Network, have you seen Social Network?
Yeah, I didn't really like him in that.
No, but that's the point, because he's a dick in that, and I think you're not supposed to like Mark Zuckerberg because he comes across like that. But I thought he played that almost perfectly. He speaks extremely quickly, do you know what I mean? And when it's a script that means he can talk almost incessantly, I mean, I get it because he doesn't come across that well. He just does some films that I like a lot, so Adventureland and Zombieland and Social Network, and he's been in a lot of films that I enjoy, but him as an actor, I get it. You know, he's a bit odd, you know, and
odd's a pretty good way of describing him, to be honest.
He's just a bit strange, isn't he? You know, and there are actors like that. The villain in the recent, oh God, Paul Dano's a bit of a weird actor. And then the guy who's in the recent Spider-Man film, who's not Jamie Foxx as a villain, obviously Electro or whatever, but it's the other guy who becomes another
the young lad who becomes the Green Goblin.
Again, he's a weird actor. So there's a bit of a group of them that kind of on the kind of, you know, they rotate around a similar role in different films. And there's always that in acting, you know, there's always that in film, there's always the kind of quirky ones and stuff, but it was just not the right, I mean, look, what made it sickening to me is that there was talk of Bryan Cranston. I was like, he would just have been perfect in that role. And I think he would have raised the whole film, to be honest, because he can play bloody evil, do you know what I mean? But intelligent, and he delivers a script and a part like not many other actors in cinema at the minute, and you just end up going for fucking Jesse Eisenberg. It was just, it's a ridiculous decision, and then he was given a ridiculous script and he was made to look ridiculous, and it's probably the worst part of the film. And his whole, the whole thing with Lex was just baffling, and like you said about the director's cut and those elements, it just, without knowing quite what the hell's going on and how he's getting, trying to get power from him, or, you know, the whole background with Zod and all the rest of it, it's just a bit strange. Do you know what I mean? It's a part of the film that doesn't really make sense, and that turned a lot of people off, and I can see kind of why. I thought the scenes with, generally, I think Amy Adams is stellar actress. I think to get her on board and keep her on board is good going, because she's always up for an Oscar nearly every year. It's
She's a good foil for Henry Cavill, because he's got a tendency to draw emotion out of scenes, because he's a very, very wooden actor. And she's
completely opposite to that.
She's almost overly emotive. So his lack of emotion and her abundance of emotion sort of balances out in the middle. But she's a good Lois Lane as well. She's
a good Lois Lane.
She seems really unsettled, and like
he's not a shocking Superman, you know. I know you give him a bit, but we've had worse.
He's a good Superman.
We've had worse.
He's a good Superman, but Superman barely speaks. His problem is, he's the worst Clark Kent, because Clark Kent does not have to turn sideways to walk through a normal door because he's so fucking ripped. Nobody's noticed that Clark Kent, this mild-mannered nobody, has got 0% body fat. It's just completely unrealistic. Nobody notices that he's built like a fucking wardrobe. I'm just not having it.
And do you know what? Even the smaller roles, like... what's his name?
Lawrence Fishburne.
Lawrence Fishburne, yeah, exactly.
I like Lawrence Fishburne a lot. He's got one of those voices.
I like him a lot, but again, he was underutilized or badly used in the film. Do you know what I mean? He wasn't given much of it. He was just a bit brain dead in that role.
He just tends to tell people off, doesn't he? He tells Clark off for not writing the story about the football team, then he tells Lois off, then he tells Clark off again, and then he sends her on a helicopter, and
it just wasn't... They didn't utilize. Look, when I watched it at the time, I think my expectations were really low, because a lot of people had gone really heavy on it, and
like me,
critics went way, way, way lower than expected. Do you know what I mean? Because normally they'll give it a pass, but they gave it an absolute battering. And it's just, I think the disappointing thing with Batman versus Superman is because of what it could have been, and there's a lot of people trying to gloss over the fact that, yeah, it's an okay film, and it's got this is good about it, which it does, and that's good about it. But they're trying to find positives. You know, if you're watching a Batman film, it should be easy. Do you know what I mean? It should be, Batman versus Superman should be monumental in scale.
Yeah.
And I just don't think they got that across at all well. And I just think they tried to introduce too many elements. I mean, the one thing that actually worked, and only because they had no other choice, because they've chosen to do it backwards almost, is those kind of CCTV footages of the Flash and Aquaman and the Cyborg and stuff. I actually thought that was quite cool. I thought that was quite an interesting way of introducing them. But
it's rushed, isn't it? It's because they haven't...
It should be the wrong way around, yeah. I mean, we should have this film in 10 years' time. Well, probably not 10 years, 5 years. This film should have come out, and I think it should have been perfect. And it should have had... You know, your Batman, you should have had your Ben Affleck's Batman film coming out. And I know that's up in the air a little bit with who's going to direct it. And
who's going to write it.
You should have had a Flash Yeah, exactly. It should have had a Flash, you know. He's struggling a bit, Ben Affleck, though. It's a strange one because it's Live by Night is bombed, which is just released this year, and it's not done well at all. His portrayal of Batman is quite well liked, but you know he's struggling a bit. And then he did The Accountant last year that didn't do well. So from his kind of Oscar days, or you know, with Argo and The Town and other things he's been in recent years, and directed, I think. I don't know if he's worried about the Batman film and getting it wrong. It's a lot of pressure. Do you know what I mean?
He seemed to be. Anyone that hasn't read his statement, he was attached to obviously star, direct, and he was writing it alongside Geoff Johns. And his statement basically came out and said, "Batman is too important a character to fuck this up. So I've got to focus on one thing." And at the end of the day, I respect him massively for this. He is an actor. And he's putting the acting first.
Well, he's normally a guy that's happy to direct himself, and you know.
But I think maybe the scale and the magnitude of what's ahead of him, especially in light of the criticism of Batman versus
Superman. Well, scale is the big thing, because what Ben Affleck's known for, Argo's got a little bit where, you know, it's a little bit different than Argo, but the other films are all Boston based. You know, they're all kind of deep, dark, gritty. You know, Boston's not known for being the sunniest of worlds, you know, and it's kind of got that about it. And he's doing kind of gangster-esque stuff or mob-based stuff or just dark, you know, I don't know, things that are going on or going wrong in life, really, in those kind of areas of the world. But he's not doing something with CGI in it. He's not done anything of the scale of production that's involved in a Batman film, of the action sequences. You know, I think it would be hard for him to direct something like that, because, you know, you talk about Marvel and, what's his name, who directed Jon Favreau, who directed Iron Man, obviously, he's gone on to do Jungle Book. He's got a massive history with CGI, and he's really embraced it throughout his career. And I think that's what you need, or you need the production team behind them. And I just don't think you can trust with DC the way it's been coming and going and stuff, whether they'd have that structure in place, do you know what I mean, to allow him to direct it, because he'd need loads of support, because he's just not got a background in it. So yeah, I think that might be a good decision. Some of the directors talking about interest me a lot. The one you were referring to, Guillermo del Toro, would be something else, because I love Hellboy, and I think he's done some really good dark films, and I think he's almost Tim Burton-esque in style at times,
but a lot more modern, isn't he? He's very modern director.
Yeah, but there's a touch of Burton about him, in the sense that he's alternative. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't do things.
Oh God, he's not mainstream by any stretch, is he?
No, I'm still a bit gutted he fell off the Hobbit project, because I think he would have done a bloody good job of that, and it would have been a bit different. Do you know what I mean? It felt quite similar to Lord of the Rings, which no one needed, and I think he would have done an amazing job of that, and he was in to do all that, and then it all kind of fell apart. So and he'd been in pre-production for like 18 months or something, so he would get involved, I think, but he wants to do Hellboy 3 by all accounts, so we'll see if that comes to pass. Really, we should discuss Hellboy one week.
Yeah I'd be down for that.
Yeah, I think those two films are great. So
there's a lot of other films really that fall into this category of the in between.
There's a lot.
Just scanning back, you've got some of the older Superman films were very much, they just wanted Superman films because they didn't really have any other IP out there at the minute. There was a Superman in 78, Superman 2 in 80, Superman 3 in 83, Supergirl in 84, Superman 4 in 87. It's literally just every couple of years, just throw a super.
They were kind of made for straight to DVD, weren't they?
Yeah, they were straight, probably even straight to fucking Betamax. They were that shit. But then some of the more modern ones, you've got Constantine with Keanu Reeves. It was all right.
Could have been good.
It should have been so much better.
I know, it was a bit shit.
Superman Returns, was crap. The only good thing about that is that I like Brandon Routh, but he is
He's a crap Superman. And he's a good
Clark Kent, but he's a crap Superman.
Yeah, I know. He is a good Clark Kent, but he's a terrible Superman.
He's not got the build for it, and he's not got he's not believable as an otherworldly figure that's, you know, all powerful and can't be stopped by anything but a stupid green rock. Jonah Hex, a really interesting character. Crap film. Could have been promising. Then, of course, Man of Steel, which was...
It falls in bad. Do you know what I mean?
It's viewable.
It's not a good film.
But it's still mildly painful. I've voiced my grievances about that, least of all the fact that Superman broke someone's neck.
Let's not do it again.
I'll just get angry and I'll start punching walls. And I'm too close to a very nice TV and I don't want to hit it. Then the last one really for this section, unsurprisingly, is the other big DC film of last year, Suicide Squad. Really. It came in with reasonably, you know, good expectations. It was well.
We were really excited about it. And the funny thing is about it, it bloody did well at the box office.
It made 100 million less than Batman versus Superman, but half the budget.
Well, it half the budget. It must have had half million. Marketing budget as well that they don't talk about. It can't have been. I mean, there was a quite heavy marketed film, which I think we're going to get used to with DC. But it didn't have anywhere near the Batman vs Superman budget for marketing. That was just off the absolute charts. So, yeah. Do you know what? I've watched it once. I might revisit it at some point. But
I've only watched it once, but I'm going to watch it with Michelle when I can get a decent version of the extended version.
Yeah, the extended I'll watch. It's a bit of a car crash, though, isn't it? I mean, let's be honest.
I didn't think it was as bad as most people think it was.
I would say you're quite forgiving of things you like.
I am, but bearing in mind, Suicide Squad isn't something that I'm overly attached to.
No, that's true.
Like, Harley Quinn is a beloved character. She's fucking brilliant. Deadshot is one of the best Batman villains. She
was done well. I mean, Margot Robbie, to me, I think she was the most redeemable part of the film. But I think what they did and what they fucked up on is that they put all their eggs in her basket as such. Do you know what I mean?
They were a matron.
But they did, didn't they? She would bring the audience and the crowd, which they did. I think she did. Her hot pants attracted at least $700 million of that $900 million that they did or whatever.
Yeah, that's probably fair. But we said in the preview, didn't we? They were clearly relying very heavily on the star quality of Margot Robbie and Will Smith.
But Will Smith, like, didn't even get a decent part, man. I mean,
I thought he did. I thought he was good. I thought he did a really good job of. Half
I think the
of
problem
Deadshot,
with
the arrogant side of him, but what they didn't really show off the other side of him where he's ridiculously principled. I mean, he's a mercenary for hire, but he only does exactly what he's supposed to. If there's a room of 20 people, he'll only kill the one guy he's been paid to. He's a man of principle. He's not interested in the rest.
They tried to get that across, but they did it quite badly.
They didn't do it well.
What they failed to do in that film is they didn't have a decent villain, and they were villains, so that was kind of weird. The Joker was awful.
The Joker was just, oh my God. He should be shot.
He had no rights to be in that film in any capacity. No. There was almost no need for him. I think the only scene that made sense was the flashback to why Harley Quinn became Harley Quinn. That's why he was in it.
Because you only needed it for that.
Do you know what I mean? And that would have been it. And actually, if that was it, you'd probably think it's passable. But they didn't need Batman either, to be honest.
I wouldn't have thought it was passable because his whole depiction of the Joker was absolute fucking garbage.
The problem is,
as a plot point, are we going to see that again?
I mean, that's the issue.
Probably, yeah. it sounds like he's potentially going to be the villain in the Batman, and nobody knows.
Jesus Christ. You just hope it's not.
I pray it's not. If he's the villain in the Batman, it's going to fail. It's going to fail because Jared Leto's Joker is the worst depiction of the Joker I've ever seen.
Again, that's the issue. It's not even an actor. You can't blame an actor.
No, it's not his fault.
No. It's the direction, isn't it? And then you start to look at it.
And whichever.
Whoever.
I said a word I don't like saying on podcast then. It's whichever person decided on the tattoos and the grill and the hair and the fact that he apparently is allergic to shirts and the voice and the laugh. Literally every single thing about him is crap. I don't even think that Joker's got one redeeming feature.
No.
Can't think of any.
No, I can't either. And I just... Yeah. And the other aspect of the film is that it spent so long trying to get you to know these characters that it spent less time actually developing any form of a story. Do you know what I mean? It was just very rushed in the end and nothing really happened. But
like Batman versus Superman, it's a gateway film, isn't it? It's a gateway to a Harley Quinn solo film. She's more than likely going to be in the Gotham City Sirens project, which David Ayer is attached, apparently.
Mm.
So he's not being so scared off by it.
Well, it's by far the biggest grossing film he'll ever produce, it, unless he does another one that's bigger of this type. Because, I mean, he's done indie films, he's done small, low-budget, quite good films as well, actually, which is why I was expecting big things. But I just hope DC give their directors a bit of license. I hope they give Zack less license to do what he wants, but I hope they give the other ones a bit more freedom. I mean, we talked about Wonder Woman in the preview a couple of weeks ago, and interesting who they've got on board for that. I mean, the guy that's doing attached to the, I think it's to the Flash, is it? Or no, oh God, it was to Thor Ragnarok, actually, with someone mental. That really came out of the blue. But they'll probably make it work because it's Marvel. But DC do have a habit of getting these good directors on board and basically not letting them do what they want to do. So it's a bit of a worry. Are we done with the bad? I think we can hit the ugly.
I think, yeah. In that case, we may as well move on to the ugly, of which there's no surprise that the ugliest thing that DC have probably done is going to be Green Lantern. Shock horror. The Green Lantern fanboy among us, i.e. me, was
I haven't actually
wounded.
Seen it all the way through, you know. I haven't seen it. Well, yeah, but why would I? It was terrific. It's one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Okay, I'm going to give it three positives. Ryan Reynolds is hilarious. Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds on screen, it can only be a good thing because they're brilliant together. And it had Kilowog in it. Kilowog is one of the funniest Green Lantern characters ever. He's the big, massive pink fucker that trains everyone, calls everyone poozer. Other than that, it was just diabolical. And one of the darkest days of my life was actually being so excited to go and watch that. My favourite character's finally in his own film, and it was shit. It was like being punched in the face for 2 hours.
I really felt for you because I know how much... I know how much you kind of love Green Lantern, and you hope
for more than half of my life.
It's all kinds of wrong. I mean, it's all kinds of wrong as a film. And I think having read about it and read what went on with the director and I can't remember who his first choice was, but it wasn't Reynolds. Let's put it that way.
He wanted
nothing to do with Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, why isn't it? Was it not Ryan Gosling?
No, it wasn't Gosling. I will have a look, but it was someone that surprised me a little bit, but he was desperate.
Oh, it was Jack Black.
No, it was. No.
In 2004, there was a script written by Robert Smigel, which was set to star Jack Black in the lead role, but it was supposed to be a comedy film.
God, that would have been awful. That would have been terrible, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The
Green Lantern idea has been floating around since 1997. And the first person that they approached was actually Kevin Smith, just after he'd finished writing Superman Lives, the much talked about Nicolas Cage Superman film that was never made, thank God. Although Green Lantern would have been then only the second worst superhero film ever made, because that thing was an absolute train wreck from start to finish, that Superman Lives project. If you've never read about it, just go online and search Kevin Smith, Superman Lives, and read about how a studio basically turned an all right idea into just, it was like a train wreck that then caught fire, that then sank to the bottom of the ocean and then caught fire again somehow. It was that bad. It was apocalyptically shit.
Was it worse than Batman and versus Batman and Robin?
Oh, God, yeah, it really was. It would have been. It would have made Batman and Robin look like fucking Civil War. it really, really would. Oh, there was all kinds of shit in it.
Yeah, I think it's Batman Forever, Mr. Freeze, because that's pretty up there as well.
Yes.
So Batman and Robin and Batman Forever are both awful films as well. I mean,
for one of our favourite words,
often say, I often say
Bat-Nichols.
Oh yeah, that's the only redeeming feature. Yeah. George Clooney is just the worst choice for Batman.
It's like 40% chin. You can't have a Batman that's just a giant. You remember the Crimson Chin? That's what he was like, but it was like the black/silver/grey chin.
He's just one giant chin. Yeah. No.
Wouldn't it be hard for Mr. Freeze to fucking hit him, would he? Just aim for the chin?
For the chin. It's just, to be honest, you know, Marvel have made some films that, I mean, Fantastic Four is shocking twice. But it's done by different studios, isn't it? It's 20... Fox or whatever, so it's not kind of the same affiliation. There's been a few kind of bad X-Men origin films and various bits and pieces, but I think you know, you're looking at the produced world of cinema in this context, and I think they win the ugly hands down.
Oh God, yes. And that we haven't even mentioned, just having a look back through some of the other films, you've got a couple of shit Superman films in there.
Yeah.
You've then got Steel, the one with Shaquille O'Neal.
That sounds amazing.
Which is, it's a brilliant idea for a character. He was first introduced in The Death of Superman. He's a Western.
He's got a bit of Luke Cage about him.
A bit, yeah. He's a normal African-American. He's a weapons engineer, weapons manufacturer. And when Superman dies, he decides that someone's got to step up. You know, the world needs a Superman. But he never claims to be Superman. He's just a guy trying to help out, and he builds himself this suit out of steel, and he carries this gigantic two-handed mallet that he uses, and he's a good character. He's still around now. He's in the Superwoman comic that's part of the Rebirth line, and he's been around now for probably a good pushing 20 years.
But he's a bit part, you know.
He's a supporting player, and it was Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, the guy's 7'2".
Sounds like DC meets Space Jam. You know, it sounds
It was
awful.
Worse than Space Jam. At least Space Jam had Bugs Bunny in it.
Space Jam is, if Guy ever listens to this, Space Jam is one of Guy Drinkle's favourite films. I don't know why. I don't know if he was hit on his head as a child or something.
Maybe he's only ever watched it drunk or like he drinks
maybe.
Petrol.
Yeah, maybe. He probably has like a box set of like, and Cool Runnings is quite a good film, but he's probably got like Cool Runnings, Space Jam. What a kind of like Happy Gilmore, like alternatively bad sporting films.
I won't hear a goddamn bad thing said about Cool Runnings. You can shut your whore mouth.
I know. It's just, it's a bit sappy, but it's you know, it's a classic. But, you know, anyway, that's Guy Drinkle. We've talked to a few people on this pod, not too many. There's a few others. It would have been nice to throw out a few, you know, ideas to the listeners on this one and see what they recommended as bad films. But we might do a little bit of a poll of the worst DC film ever produced.
There's also
the best as well. Yeah.
And another one I very often forget about, Catwoman.
Oh, Halle Berry.
Yeah, which actually lost money.
It lost money.
Wow, I've just had a look. The Steel film cost $16 million to make.
Go on, made a million.
$1.7
million. Oh, that's classic.
That is the textbook definition.
$1.7 million. Oh,
that is appalling.
God.
Catwoman was 100 million and it made 82. So still a 20 million in the red.
Million pounds or dollars. What
and
waste.
And bear in mind, this is Halle Berry. This was like right in the middle.
Peak
of
Halle Berry.
Big
yeah.
spell for Halle Berry.
And come off winning an Oscar and doing various things about
I'm
that
just
going
to have a look what else she was doing around that time. She'd done X-Men in 2000, Swordfish, Monsters Ball, Die Another Day, yeah, X2, Gothica, then Catwoman. Then she did another X-Men film. So she was in a reasonable, you know, a good run of form. And then all of a sudden...
Is she one of the only ones to have crossed over from Marvel to DC? Doing the old
X-Men? Yeah.
Probably could trivia question that.
There's not many. I'm going to research that now just in case you ever decide to throw that at me in the future.
I'll throw it at someone else because no one ever listens to these spots anyway.
This is true. It's only me.
Especially this time. It's like the graveyard. You know, once you get past 45 minutes, I reckon we lose most of our listenership. So we could probably say anything and no one would be listening right now.
Just don't say anything really controversial or offensive.
No.
Because
I won't.
We're not allowed to get political.
No.
The AI legal department won't let us.
No, we'll be banned from entering the US ever again and I don't want to go. I'm going late this year.
I don't think I'm allowed anyway. I think I've said too much shit on my Twitter in the last couple of weeks about Trump. I think if I ever try to set...
I'm amazed Dave Hendrick's still allowed in Canada, but I guess it's still safe zone.
Yeah. scrolling back through the list, I mean, they're the real sort of...
Yeah, these are all the standouts and the lowlights, obviously. But, I mean, there's a lot of good things in and around DC. And I mean, we haven't talked games because we haven't got the time. Just to kind of put it out there, we are going to do a Batman month at some point this year. We're going to do a crossover with the One Up podcast with Guy and then with Joe Simpson on the movie night and get a few of our contributors involved and love to get Joey and Kay and just other people involved, like kind of a big month of podcasting really and talk all things film and you know, Batman basically, which is, I couldn't think of anything better.
Pretty good way to spend the evening.
Which comes into the good, I would hope, is the latest Batman Lego film, which is apparently incredible. And
it's killing it at the moment.
There's been suggestions that they should just scrap any future Batman real life things and just do them out of Lego, which would suit everyone, to be honest. I think it'll be great and I can't wait to see it with my little boy. So I think we've got to hope. You know, of all the things we said negative, there's a lot of positives in there. I think there's still hope for the future for DC in film.
The big hope at the minute
is
certainly Aquaman. Aquaman's there was a really
it
good
could
piece
be great.
With Jason Momoa the other day. They've been planning this for 5 years because I think he was on one of the late night American shows. It was either Jimmy Kimmel or someone like that, and they said so. Yeah. How long have you been attached to this? And he said it was about 5 years that he wasn't
that
supposed to be telling
helps.
Anyone.
So no, that usually helps.
So if we've praised them in Marvel in the past for, you know, Cumberbatch, you know, they were willing to wait. They've obviously had this in mind for a while. So while we do criticize DC for being very, very short sighted, they've clearly had some aspects of this. But what I would suspect is 5 years ago was round about the time that Green Lantern was done. So
yeah,
Green Lantern and then an Aquaman film. They were clearly, you know, Green Lantern presumably was supposed to be the first step towards a Justice League film.
They just got rebooted.
And
well, they just did
died.
It so badly. They did it so badly. And the whole, it was a mess, that film. And you know, you've got to think there's a lot of money attached to these films. And if it all goes wrong, then yeah, it's hard to then reinvest it. It's hard to twist a board of directors' arms and go, you know what's going to work, Aquaman, and they go, no, fuck off, you just wasted $200 million or whatever on this shit, we're not going to do that again. So it's all about getting the right timing, you know, the right actors. I'm desperately concerned about Ezra Miller as the Flash, but we just got to see how it goes.
I'm concerned about that as a project, because if you think logically, You've got a vision, you've got a script, you've got a director. The director then gets replaced. The script is then looked at by the second director. He's going to change bits, isn't he? But then it happens again. So you're now on your third script. and your third director. It's now starting to become a bit of a Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah, well, it's going to become a Green Lantern, is the fear, I would imagine, because, I mean, that had one director all the way through, but it sounds like he had no interest in bloody directing the thing anyway.
Well, yeah, based on what Ryan Reynolds has said, it sounds like the guy just had no fucking clue.
Well, they hated each other, and it doesn't work, you know? The only good thing to come out of that is Reynolds and Lively got together. So, I mean, yeah, it's a mess of a project, and you don't need that because... I don't think Marvel would never allow it. That's the difference. You know what I mean? There's too much structure in place there. And you know, I feared for Ant-Man after Edgar Wright fell off the project after being involved in pre-production for 7 years or something insane, and wrote all the script and was ready to direct it. I still would have loved to seen an Edgar Wright Ant-Man film, don't get me wrong. But they picked it up and they, you know, dusted themselves off and they got on with it and they made a bloody good film. So... It can be done, but if you've had all this messing around and DC haven't been, well, you know, Warner Brothers haven't actually been doing overly well with actually, you know, performances are good because they market the shit out of them, but they're not producing films that anyone loves. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't say anyone loved Batman vs. Superman or Suicide Squad. We've got high hopes of Wonder Woman, and Justice League could be incredible if they get it right. I don't think with Zack Snyder on board, I'm still a bit concerned, but there's still scope and potential, and we just want to see that these, you know, animated and comics is all good for me and Lego. I guess, you know, I'll keep nailing those, mate, so we can't complain too much.
Yeah, well, my major thing is I'm a happy boy because I get my comics, and I've got all sorts coming in. I've got Batman, Superman, two Green Lanterns. Technically, I've got two Batmans.
We haven't talked TV as well. I mean, you know, TV's been a massive success.
Flash, killing it. Arrow, killed it, then got shit, now he's killing it again. Legends of Tomorrow.
It's still a bit shit, you're being too kind.
Was shit, and is now absolutely destroying it. Legends of Tomorrow's actually been getting some of the better ratings out of all of them. Supergirl's been brilliant since day one. I can't
recommend
it.
You're too kind to these things.
Trust me, have you watched any of Supergirl?
I watched an episode.
Yeah,
I will
you've watched one.
I know, but you are too generous. It's a bit cheesy.
You're a bit cheesy, but, you know, you're all right-ish.
Yeah, but
that's
you are too...
getting out of me.
Yeah, you've been too defensive. But
I am defensive. You're insulting my children.
Yeah, I'm not your children. Your child is a furry dog.
He's actually sat on the floor
too many
and heard
pictures
that.
Of. Well, you know, you took too many pictures of every day. look, there's loads we could talk about. We could be here for ages, as always.
And we should be.
We will come back to doing, I don't know, we need to do something a little bit different because we're not at the end of any of the things we're watching at the minute, so we won't come back to the end of those yet. Walking Dead is coming out soon, and obviously The Flash and Arrow are ongoing. Gotham's ongoing at the minute. The big film up next is Guardians of the Galaxy 2, isn't it?
No, it's Logan.
Oh, Logan.
Logan's out in March.
Oh, we might preview Logan.
We will be. If you're I'll sit here on my own and bloody do it.
Nice. It looks amazing. And then, yeah, we were going to revisit from the older films. So we might look at Hellboy, like we talked about, and maybe look at Blade because we've got an interested party, certainly interested in doing those films. So, yeah, there's plenty more to come from us in soon weeks. And if people hassle Stu, then he might finish this Green Lantern article he's been working on for about a month.
Yeah, don't hassle me because it's really, really difficult. I've written it and scrapped it about three times now. It's like the Flash script, but I'm doing the humane thing rather than just keep patching it. I've completely got rid of it and I'm starting again.
Have you really done that? Wow.
Yeah. I've been back to it a couple of times and then I've just gone, you know what, and I've deleted the whole thing and I'm just going to start again.
Shit. Wow. Okay, well, I'll wait to read that. So, yeah, thanks for joining us. If you disagree with us, then...
Tough shit.
Send all of your responses to @GagsTandard. If you agree with us, then follow us on @AIComicPod. And yeah, it's nice to keep getting this interaction and it's nice to be going again this year. And yeah, keep listening. We appreciate all the feedback and the retweets. And yeah, I think that's it from us.
Yeah. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Take it easy.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.